RNZ National and On the Rest is History. We look back to this week in 1978. July 25th was the day that changed the way the world looked at infertility. It was the birthday of Louise Brown, the world's first IVF baby, and she was born in Manchester, England, to parents Leslie and Peter Brown. And the news of Louise's birth went round the world, as you can imagine, and prompted headlines celebrating the miracle and hope for people struggling with infertility. The Daily Mail in the UK had the headline, "It's a girl. First test tube baby is born and medical history is made as a mother's dreams come true." And fathers, I would imagine. New Zealander Dr. Richard Fisher was in the UK at the time. He was finishing his study of obstetrics and gynaecology and would later go on to co-found Fertility Associates in New Zealand in 1987, at a time when the technology was still very young, and he joins us now. Hi, Richard.
Good evening, Karen.
Louise has just had her birthday, of course. She's 43 now.
It is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
What do you remember about her birth and the world's reaction to it?
It was a tremendously exciting time. I think, you know, it wasn't a time of total comfort because no one was quite sure what this technology was. But I think most people who were involved in science and medicine at the time knew that we would get it right in time. The only question was, what were the sort of costs in the meantime, costs in inverted commas in terms of ethics and morality and community comfort and outcome for children.
Her parents, or her mother, had been trying to conceive for 9 years without success, and they came across an obstetrician, Dr. Patrick Steptoe, and he had a research partner, Dr. Robert Edwards. Did you know about these two?
Yes, we were aware that I was involved peripherally in fertility work at Oxford, so Now, we knew what was happening. We knew they had been trying for a very long time. And in fact, there had been a pregnancy in Melbourne, which turned out to be an ectopic pregnancy, a pregnancy in the tube, the fallopian tube, before this live-born infant. So there were two or three research units around the world looking at IVF.
Do you think in 1978 that people really had any idea how quickly this treatment would become mainstream?
Well, I think... people who were involved in the fertility world had, you know, thought it had real promise. It wasn't without trepidation. It was new and unproven, and there was a lot of community disquiet about it. But I don't think we ever thought it would not work. We knew it would work in time. What we needed was a group of extraordinarily courageous women and men who were willing to go through this process to try and succeed.
Maybe a lot of the opposition to it was those words, test tube.
Yes.
And all the pictures that we saw of a test tube and people thinking, oh, it's a baby made in the lab.
Yeah. Well, in some ways it is. It doesn't matter about it. Just about a matter of introducing a sperm and an egg somewhere different from where they were. Because initially, all the original IVF was just done for tubal disease. In other words, women who had blocked fallopian tubes where a sperm and egg could not meet up together inside the body. So this was a bypass technique where you took the egg out of the ovary, took the sperm out of the ejaculate, put them together in a test tube and said, "Hi, nice to meet you, get to know each other." And it took, you know, it wasn't something that happened overnight. It took years and years of research.
What is actually the process? What happens?
In general, the process is that it doesn't really matter what the underlying cause of fertility is, but it's giving some drugs to a woman to stimulate her ovaries to make more than the one egg she would normally make each month. And we'd like to make, you know, 5 or 10. We then take those eggs by putting a needle into the ovary under sedation, local anaesthetic, put them with sperm in the petri dish, and then they go into a little incubator where they sit for time. These days they can sit there without being disturbed because we watch them with a camera. They are continuously observed. And so, you know, when you, I don't know, but in my generation and in the generations beyond me, people on the 21st birthday, they used to get a picture of them as a child or a baby. And then later they got a picture of them as a ultrasound picture of an embryo. These days we can show you your moment of conception and your development of your first 5 days into a bunch of cells. That'll be your 21st birthday party trick.
That's great. Yeah, what a great party trick.
This is me at the beginning, perfect at this time, only altered by time and things that happened around me.
And life, correct. What were the problems with trying to do this fertility treatment in a test tube?
Well, no one understood the media, the medium, that this needed to happen. And so there was an awful lot of work looking at what was the right culture material that you could grow embryos in, how long should you let them grow for, when was the best time to put them back, how did you actually prime the endometrium, the uterine lining, so that when you put an embryo back, it had a chance of actually implanting. And so there's a lot of basic science about what was involved in implantation, what was really embryo growth and development about, and how would you synchronize all those things. And there was an awful lot of speculation and guessing and a bit of black magic at that time.
I imagine it's quite stressful because you're dealing with potential human lives.
Oh, enormously stressful. And people look back and they look back at Steptoe and Edwards, as being the pioneers in the UK, and they look at people like us in New Zealand saying, the real pioneers were the patients. They were just extraordinarily courageous people who were willing to go and do something brand new, relatively unproven, but we're reasonably comfortable it was safe, but just exhaust themselves emotionally and physically through what was a very grueling process at that time. Things have simplified so much more. It's still a emotionally exhausting process for everybody now, but physically it's much easier than it used to be. But it's still not easy.
No, people listening who have had IVF or are planning to have it, it's a lot of research for a start that they have to do, and then they have to go through the physical. It seems quite grueling.
Yeah, I mean, physically it is a lot easier than it was, but you would never look at somebody doing IVF and saying, oh, that's just a walk in the park. It's a really tough journey.
Well, you came back to New Zealand and you then introduced IVF into New Zealand in the 1980s with Dr. Freddie Graham.
Yes. Well, Freddie had started the work at National Women's quietly in the university department without sort of letting too many people know, with a lot of support from Professor Mont Liggins, who the Liggins Institute is now named after. And he had got a primate embryologist from the States to come and visit for a while. And they quietly worked on doing things in the lab to try and get things right until they had their first pregnancy relatively quickly. And one of the great advantages of coming from New Zealand was that we were not academic or financial competitors to anybody. And there were a relatively small number of people in the world who were doing IVF, and we got to know them all. And so we had a lot of the transfer of information and technology that we could use in relative comfort without any anxiety about somebody saying, well, I'm giving away everything I know. So we were lucky in that sense. And we were also lucky that we had an amazingly supportive group of couples, women mainly, who set up an infertility support group, who were supportive of us, were supportive at the political level, battled through all the angst that the community had at the time in the early 80s. The sort of general community view was about 60% of people were unsure or opposed, and about 20% were confident, and the rest were sort of don't know. And that's been an enormous change over there. So, we're now got sort of 90% of people who are entirely comfortable and 10% who don't like it. And they usually don't like it on faith-based ideas, and that's a choice they may reasonably make.
Yes, do you know who, well, I'm sure you do, who the first IVF baby was in New Zealand?
Yes, I do know. But no, I'm not going to tell you.
Is that confidential? I suppose that person hasn't come.
I think it isn't. There have been stories over the years about various people who were either the first conception, the first delivery, or the first other things. But those people are all reasonably keen to stay under the radar. They don't want to be media fodder, really.
Yeah, no, don't blame them. Louise Brown does interviews.
She's remarkable. She has absolutely put her head up everywhere. And I think it's, you know, because of people like her that, you know, the world's become much more comfortable with IVF. I mean, they look at her and say she's a normal person.
Yes.
And she's a normal person in every way. I mean, she's a normal person physiologically and genetically and everything else, but she's also a very normal person in that she speaks like a normal person and she doesn't pretend to be anybody different.
In your capacity with Fertility Associates, when was the first conception that you had?
We started Fertility Associates in 1987, but we'd already been at NASTA Women's for 4 years at that stage. And we started Fertility Associates because we had a 7-year waiting list and there was no sign of any more funding for anybody. And basically patients were saying, we're getting on a plane and going to Australia or going to America for treatment. This is crazy. Why don't we have some local option? So we started up Fertility Associates in 1987.
How many families, women, people come to you for fertility treatment a year, say?
I think it's probably, I'm trying to work that out, yeah, about 1,600 or 1,700 IVF babies a year. So we're probably looking at, probably only about 5,000 couples a year, because not everyone has IVF, not everyone needs IVF. A lot of people just need good advice.
Yes.
And then there are other treatments which are relatively simpler. None of them are emotionally easier. But they're simpler in terms of what happens. So lots of people. And if you look at IVF now, about one child in every classroom in New Zealand is conceived from Fertility Associates.
One child in every classroom?
Yeah.
Oh, gee, is that right?
Mm.
That's incredible. These patients that you have, do you keep in touch with them and their children?
With some we do, and we've always been very clearly of the view that they're not our children, they're not our babies. We don't have lots of pictures of babies scattered throughout our clinics. We've tried to avoid that, you know, this is all about us and this is all about them, really.
Yes, it's all about them. For people who just hear the words IVF, perhaps you could expand it in... What's the next
word? In vitro fertilisation. In glass.
In glass?
In glass. It's now actually in plastic, but just in little plastic wells inside an incubator, which has become much more automated than it used to be. I mean, we used to have to put the embryos inside a little Petri dish, and then you'd have to take it out every day and look at it. And that's, you know, a bit like looking at your vegetables. You pull your lettuce out every day and have a look at it and put it back again. And so the whole process has become much better controlled, and that's why the pregnancy rates have increased so much.
It should be IPF, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, well, that would be more accurate.
It's profound, though, isn't it? When the work that you do is profound.
It is. For me, it has been a remarkable way to spend my working life. I've had the privilege and pleasure of being involved in thousands of people's lives. I mean, it's not always triumph, and sometimes it's a disaster, but one of the things we were also very clear about when we started was that nobody should leave our clinic any worse off than when they came. And that's not universally true internationally, or it certainly wasn't. There were a lot of people who just had things done to them and had no support. And we got involved with, you know, good patient support groups, good counselling services from very early on. So we tried to create an environment in which it was as good as we could make it. Never going to be perfect, but as good as we can make it, and we keep striving to make it better.
And are you still having a full working life? Are you in the office?
No, I don't do any clinical work anymore. I decided as I got to my early 70s that it was time that young people stopped coming to see an old man about getting pregnant.
Fair enough. Well, I'm glad you're still speaking about it, and it's been lovely to talk to you, so thank you for joining us this evening.
It's a pleasure. Okay, bye-bye.
That's Dr. Richard Fisher speaking there on the world's first test tube baby and fertility treatment today.